Tech Fighter Worldwide.
It's the High Tech Podcast in plain English with an hour's worth of news in about 20 minutes. That's because we leave out the commercials, the station breaks, the sports, and most of the jingles. Podcast number 532 for the 26th of February, 2017. This week, libraries continue to expand the services they provide, and Hoopla, a video streaming service, brings free access to an array of videos. Malware continues to be a danger for everyone, but more is now being aimed at Macs. Google is offering a new kind of wireless phone service that might appeal to you, even though you'll need to buy a new phone to use it. In short circuits, auto dealership personnel thought that millions of customer records had been exposed recently, but nothing of the sort had happened. Verizon will pay about $350 million less for Yahoo as a result of the numerous data breaches Yahoo revealed, but $350 million is chump change in this deal. In spare parts only on the website, Microsoft delays February's patch Tuesday until March. And no matter how essential email is to your business, it's also the primary vector for spreading malware. As I was writing this week's podcast, The Contract was playing on my second monitor. It's a film with Morgan Freeman and John Cusack. I borrowed it from the library, and I can watch another 10 movies this month for free. It's not Netflix, but it's the kind of inventive service that libraries are offering these days, the kinds of things that might grind to a halt if the Federal Communications Commission kills net neutrality. Hoopla is a digital content platform that provides movies, music, ebooks, comics, graphic novels, and TV series online. The content can be accessed using a web browser, an iOS device, or an Android device, or a Kindle reader. Content can be streamed on most web browsers, as well as streamed or downloaded to mobile platforms. Subscriptions through public libraries enable patrons to borrow the resources and view them online. The library, of course, pays a fee. Library patrons then receive the service at no charge. That no charge part is what differentiates the Hoopla library service from online services like Netflix and other paid services. Users can set Hoopla to Kids Mode, which restricts the titles shown to those that have been judged appropriate for children. You can also choose whether you want Hoopla to send promotional messages and show or hide your borrowing history. You can also set genres that the service will use to make suggestions for you. The Worthington Public Library website, which is associated with the Columbus Metropolitan Library, says patrons can access digital video, music, comics, ebooks, and audiobook titles for use on a computer, smartphone, or tablet. All content is available for streaming. Some can be downloaded for offline viewing. Offerings include current and classic comics, ebooks, audiobook titles from a variety of genres, movies, television shows, educational videos, and documentaries. Also, there are some music albums. There's no waiting list. Lending periods vary from 3 days for video to 7 days for music and 21 days for ebooks, comics, and audiobooks. And the selection of videos isn't as wide as you'd find on Netflix, of course, and the streaming quality doesn't quite match what Netflix provides. You are limited to borrowing 12 titles per month. That's still one every 2 or 3 days. The first motion picture I used Hoopla for was Into the Woods. It's an amusing amalgamation and confusion of numerous children's stories. I saw it first on stage in New York City many years ago. This is an appealing option for those who like to watch videos on tablets or phones, because the videos can be downloaded there, but not to standard computers. Hoopla is also a good example of how libraries continue to change with the times. I don't visit the physical building as much as I used to, but I still do use a lot of library resources. In fact, maybe it's just about time to put together another segment on just how many invaluable resources libraries offer. Macs continue to become more appealing targets for those who create malware, even as some Mac owners hang on to the outdated belief that Macs are immune. No matter who you are or what operating system you have, you are probably somebody's target. The latest threat is ransomware that encrypts files on Macs. The most common vector seems to be BitTorrent websites. The really bad news is that if you pay the ransom, you won't get your files back. Users of the Mac OS are still generally right in thinking that they are less likely to fall victim to these kinds of things. But in this case, that's not a good thing. The thieves who wrote the malware did a poor job, which is why users won't get their files back. The malware has been given the name of OS X File Coder E, and it pretends to be a tool that lets users remove copy protection from commercial software. It's written in Swift, a programming language from Apple. It's also not digitally signed, and that makes installation difficult on the latest versions of the Mac OS, which tries to protect users from malware. OS X File Coder E encrypts files by creating an encryption key and then stores the file in encrypted zip archives. The developer didn't create a way for the malware to communicate with the command and control server, though, so anybody who follows instructions and pays the ransom will have no way to recover their files. The only solution is backup. That's always the best solution anyway. Anti-malware company ESET says that its researchers have monitored the Bitcoin address used by the crooks, but apparently no payments have yet been made. A bit more than a week ago, I ported my cellular number out of T-Mobile to Google Fi. It wasn't because of T-Mobile's service, which has always been pretty good, or its support, which has always been adequate. It was mainly a cost issue. I had opted for the least expensive plan that included some data. For about $50 a month, I had unlimited cell phone calls and 500 megabytes of data. Some months I made no phone calls, which makes the unlimited phone calls for $50 a month rather expensive, and I'd use maybe 100 megabytes of data. Then Google came along with a plan that's hard to refuse, unlimited cell phone calls for $20 a month, and 1,000 megabytes of data, that's a gigabyte, for $10. If you don't use all the data, you get a refund. So, based on my usage, I'm looking at a fee of closer to $20 a month instead of $50 most months. Google Fi also works with T-Mobile, Sprint, and U.S. Cellular System, so it picks whichever signal is better in your immediate area and can hop from one system to another. But what appeals to me is that it will default to a Wi-Fi signal if one is available, and that's both for phone calls and data. Actually, it's called Project Fi, and it requires a phone that you probably don't own. I had a perfectly usable Samsung Galaxy Note 4, but it won't work with Google Fi. You either need a Nexus 5X, a Nexus 6P, or a Pixel. The Pixel is by far the most expensive choice, but it's also the first phone built for use explicitly with this service. It comes in four models, Standard and XL, with 32 or 128 gigabytes of memory. The Pixel has Android 7.1, the Nexus phones have Android 6.0. The Nexus 6P has the largest screen, and the basic Pixel has the smallest. The Pixel XL has astounding screen resolution, 534 pixels per inch, but the 6P and 5X aren't far behind with 518 and 423 pixels per inch, respectively. Instead of having to type in an unlock code, I can now give the phone the finger. My finger, that is. Pointer, to be exact. It reads my fingerprint and unlocks with a slight shudder. The fingerprint can also be used to unlock LastPass. The sound quality seems to be a little better than the Galaxy Note 4, but that might be because the call is on Sprint or U.S. Cellular instead of T-Mobile, or maybe it's because the call's on Wi-Fi. I haven't found much to dislike yet, and among the features I do like, no annual service contract required, no termination fees. As with virtually all other services, you can transfer your current personal number over to Project Fi when you sign up. If you have both a cell phone number and a Google Voice number, though, you'll have to choose one or the other. When multiple carriers are available, Project Fi will move you to the network that Google's analysis shows will be the fastest in your current location. That could be a 4G LTE, a 3G, or a 2G. If you buy a new phone and move to Google Fi, later decide you don't like it, the Pixel Nexus 5X or 6P from Project Fi comes unlocked, and it can be used with any other wireless provider if you choose to leave. Additionally, if you already own one of those three supported phones, you can just bring it over to Project Fi. Google will send you a new SIM card for free. I plan to provide a more in-depth review of the phone and the Google Fi service once I've used them for a while. Expect that in, 2 or 3 months. But after only 1 week, I'm pretty impressed with both the phone and the service. In short circuits, when you buy a car, new or used, you give the dealership a lot of information. NPR once quoted someone in the industry as saying that once they were a company that made and sold cars, but now they're just a bank that happens to sell cars. You'll sit with the finance and insurance person at the dealership, and that person will try to sell you gap insurance, life insurance, mechanical breakdown insurance, rust proofing, and about 36 other things. What happens to all the data that's collected at that time? Well, some information will be shared with the company that manufactured the vehicle, of course, but some will also be shared with companies that the manufacturer or the dealer work with to judge your satisfaction with the process or to sell you additional products or services after the sale. This information is valuable, and you can be sure that somebody who shouldn't have it is trying to get it. A little more than a week ago, somebody sent an email to executives at dealerships claiming to have millions of buyer records from some of the largest dealership management systems. The bank's report, and you'll find a link to it on the TechBiter Worldwide website, said the email was designed to look like it had come from a well-known group of scammers. The response was immediate and, for the most part, wrong. The message pointed to data on a server where stolen information is frequently stored. Had anyone bothered to look, they would have found that no personal identification information was on that server. Banks says the email also included 6 URLs to what is known as a paste bin site used to upload and share text files. Each URL contained text data with customer information from 6 different dealer groups that the email named. The report continues to say that apparently it was a clumsy and amateurish attempt to sabotage a company that works with dealerships. None of the big 3 dealership management system providers named in the email had been breached, and the third-party information vendor has identified a former employee as the likely source of the attack on their system. Nevertheless, the bank's report says, the email sent the affected parties scrambling. Hundreds of thousands of dollars were spent trying to determine whether the threat was legitimate. Events such as this demand rational responses, the bank's report says, but there's little agreement on how to define rational. One company often takes the more aggressive stance, claiming that it has a responsibility to protect both the data and the security of its systems. By doing so, it says, it is protecting the security of the data of its dealership customers, even though this can interfere with the business operations of dealers. If you want to read the rest of the report, check it out. There's a link to the bank's report from the TechBiter Worldwide website. Verizon requested a discount on the purchase price of Yahoo. You might think that $350 million is a lot of money, but the entire deal is still worth a little less than $4.5 billion, and the deal will continue. You no doubt recall the story of two record-breaking breaches that Yahoo admitted in the past year, one affecting 500 million records, the other affecting a full 1 billion records. And keep in mind, the population of the entire Earth is somewhere around 7 billion. A report this week says some of Yahoo's systems are still not secure. The Wall Street Journal said security issues might present a problem with attempts to integrate Yahoo's systems with Verizon's AOL unit. Yahoo and Verizon issued a joint news release, and perhaps some of the people in the company wish they had a joint, but I'm getting off topic here. The news release said that the breaches and any losses resulting from them will not be considered in determining whether a material adverse effect has occurred. Instead, the companies agreed to simply split the cost of responding to the breaches. You can respond to spare parts. It's only on the website. Microsoft delays February's Patch Tuesday until March. And no matter how essential email is to your business, it is also the primary vector for spreading malware. Thanks for listening to TechBiter Worldwide, the podcast with an hour's worth of technology news in about 20 minutes. I'm Bill Blinn. Be sure to check out the website, www.techbiter.com. And if you like, send me an email from there. See you next week.